Hello and welcome back to Millennial. Sorry about the delay in starting this stream, but we are now here, and I'm here with AC from Toadstool Magazine, also from the Bizarre Kais. But AC, why don't you introduce yourself?
Thank you, Woz. It's lovely to be on. Thank you for inviting me onto the stream. And I've been working primarily with Bizarre Kais for the last probably year and a half or so. But decided to start up this little project, Toadstool Magazine, in the summer there, with a few friends that I met from Bizarre Kais actually, and it's been a great success, and I've had some great feedback. It's a sort of fantasy folklore based magazine. You've got like fiction. There's articles about folklore, about traditions. There's poetry. Tons of
Well, let's not get into that yet. Obviously, that's the main thing, but I want to sort of lay the groundwork first. Tell people about your involvement with Bizarre Kais and what that is. I know that there is a specific stream about it, but I'd like to hear it in your own words.
Yes, yeah, I'd recommend anybody interested go check out that stream. But the Bizarre Kais is a kind of a pulp fiction revival movement spearheaded by guys like Dave Martell. I was involved with that pretty much from the start. I think I was the first or second guy to send him a short story that I'd written, which was all horror. Like, pulp fiction does tend to be like action horror, but not always. But, I was into writing that stuff just due to love and H.P. Lovecraft and things like that. I was writing some Lovecraftian horror.
Right,
So I was involved right from the start, going and editing for him and stuff and, helping out.
And what is your own background? Did you study this kind of thing? Do you have any connection? Or is this your first time? Was it just an interest and this is the first time that you've sort of done something with it in the real world?
It's kind of just an interest. I'm sort of I did a science degree and stuff. I haven't done a literature, any study in it or anything. Just a kind of passion project. I think I've been reading these stories, especially Lovecraft, since I must have been about 12 years old. I think I was like, listening to like metal bands and they'd constantly be referencing Cthulhu this and, Yog-Sothoth that. And I'm like, what the hell does this stuff mean? I'm literally just typing in Google, finding out about Lovecraft, being, a massive Lovecraft fan basically my whole life from there. Just effectively trying to imitate him through writing. fairly shamelessly in some places, but
All right. Why didn't you talk about Lovecraft and what that whole world? Because it obviously is a huge thing in and of itself. Dave Martell talked about pulp fiction, weird fiction, mm-hmm. and so on. What space does Lovecraft occupy in modern literature? Could you describe that world?
Specifically weird fiction and cosmic horror, which is this idea. So I think he was basically the first guy to do this, to not lean on the supernatural horror tropes of like, the devil who's out to get you and all this stuff is like sort of massive extraterrestrial entities that are just, extraplanar beings that could snuff all of humanity out in an instant, but without even noticing really, we'd be sort of, it would be like the equivalent of us stepping on an ant or something. It was this like horrific idea that the universe wasn't like, there wasn't evil in the universe, but there was like just these massive uncaring entities that totally eclipse us. And he was kind of the first person to bring this idea into fiction, to my knowledge anyway, to that specific idea. And, I was always into like kind of spooky stuff and horror and that. And when I first read, I think Call of Cthulhu was the first one I read, and it was it blew my mind. It really did.
What other were we into folklore more generally as a child growing up and so on?
Yeah, absolutely. Always into fantasy, fairy tales, that kind of thing. I think that naturally does bring you towards horror if you're. I don't know if you're into like sort of. Maybe like Conan the Barbarian type stuff, you might find horror because there was a little bit of crossover there.
Were you into fantasy films like Krull and Dark Crystal, Willow, that kind of thing, or was that?
I think I'm slightly too young for that.
I'm trying to think of equivalents from the 90s and 2000s, but I don't know them.
Yeah, I was very bookish. I would read more than watch films, to be honest. A lot of the films I watched when I was younger were like Star Wars and stuff on little VHS tapes. But I just devoured fantasy books from being very young. And obviously, when you are younger, they will frequently contain a lot of stuff about fairies, gnomes, that kind of thing. You know what I mean? They'll the very lighthearted and whimsical kind of end of the fantasy spectrum. So I have very fond memories of all this stuff. It never really went away. I used to love Terry Pratchett books. I still love Terry Pratchett books. Just haven't read one in a while. But they're like constantly bringing in all this. There'll be gnomes and stuff in that, and dwarves and. He just brought a humour to it, which was absolutely magical as well, which I loved. I know some people aren't the biggest fan of Pratchett, but I think he was amazing.
Let's talk about gnomes and dwarves. That notion, the thing, because I think everyone knows basically that they've got that mental image of the wee guy with a how would you describe it, the hat. Why don't you talk? In as much depth as you like about where that archetype comes from, where that concept of the gnome comes from.
I think curiously that the very first times you start seeing references to it are like from the 16th century, and they'll be in kind of like occult texts as like earth spirits and things like this, you know what I mean? What we know of as the gnome, the little guy with the red hat that you see here, I think came about like more 18th century kind of romanticism, sort of like pining for the pre-industrial revolution world, that kind of stuff. He comes from there, and there's a really rich tradition in Scandinavia as well, which I think is where you'll get your snow, you know, the classic... Pardon me, I'm a little bit ill here.
Everyone's a little bit ill this winter. Don't worry about it.
It's absolutely mad. I've never known anything like it. Yes, I have a bit of a frog in my throat, as you can probably tell. But the Scandinavian tradition in particular is wonderful. And I keep we'll get into this later about submissions and stuff. But one of my favorite little submissions I had so far was somebody just wrote in that they drew me a lovely image of some gnomes with a bowl of porridge. And told me about, I think, like a Swedish tradition about leaving a bowl of porridge out for the house gnome at Christmas.
And what is the difference between a gnome and a dwarf, if any?
Oh, well, a gnome's a little teeny guy. Like, see, a dwarf, I suppose, would be bigger and a bit more stout. Obviously, like your Lord of the Rings dwarf would be like Gimli, right? And that's kind of where they've went in fantasy fiction ever since, is basically a Gimli-type creature. But I believe there's probably quite a lot of crossover, to be honest. When you go before that into like fantasy, into a folklore tradition, sorry, that's where you start seeing them crossover into being earth spirits as well, like guarding, underground mines or, guarding treasures underground and things like this.
See, this is an interesting thing just immediately because... I don't know what your religious views are or your religious faith, if any, but obviously there are a lot of people in our circles who complain about the influence of Abrahamic faiths and cultures, especially, well, historically in Europe, but especially recently as well. And yet what you're talking about there, spirits guarding treasures in the snow and so on, it seems incredibly not Abrahamic, incredibly European, incredibly Northern European.
Yes, 100%.
So, yeah, and you can understand why people gravitate to it, even just as a contrast to the mythology that a lot of us grow up with. And again, I'm not saying this to denigrate Christianity. If anyone is listening, I'm sure there are some Christians listening. I've got no beef against it. I don't really have a dog in that fight. I'm just talking about this purely in terms of, well, storytelling and myth building, the furniture of people's lives, the furniture of people's minds, the notions that we have in our minds. would you like to talk about that? That this, that folklore. What is the importance of folklore?
It's in our blood, isn't it? It's like our oldest traditions. It is. It's you know, sort of gathering around a fire and telling stories, and it definitely, it's in your lineage. If you are European, you probably are. If you're listening to this, let's be honest, it's in your blood. it's in your spirit, and these are things that, you know, your ancestors not only enjoyed, but in many cases probably believed as well. You know. Especially so, the magazine, you know, gnomes are the front cover image, you know, the poster boys, because the imagery is so appealing for Toadstool magazine. But we deal a lot with like fairies and stuff too, you know, like the actual fairies of fairy tale fame, stuff like that. The tradition is so rich, and it never stopped really. I'd say it, obviously things like this would have been driven underground when the Christian takeover was at its most fervent, but that was a long time ago now. It is resurfacing, but there is a kind of, I don't know, I wanted to sort of bring it back to make sure this continues in some way, shape or form, because you know, fantasy is very popular, right?
Like, oh, yes.
What modern high fantasy became, which, you know, I'm a fan of fantasy. I really like fantasy, but it's not quite the charming folklore of our ancestors.
No, it doesn't have those historical roots. It's yeah, something else.
Stuff like Lord of the Rings definitely does have the roots, but it went and did its own thing, I think, with very, you know, like different depictions of, like, for example, elves and dwarves, and like sort of ran with it, and everyone ever since has sort of ran with that, and the fairies and gnomes are being left behind in the dust, which I'm not too happy about. So,
How many of these, let me think about different creatures or beings, I guess pixies, sprites, elves, oh, gnomes, could you go through a list?
I have whole compendiums, you know, because I'm into this stuff basically, so I have quite a lot of like compilations of old Scandinavian folk tales. I have some wonderful art books. I think one of my favourite ones is by an artist, John Bauer, who illustrated a lot of stories about trolls in Scandinavian folklore. I think if you Google the images, you will have seen them. If you don't know the name, you will have seen these images floating around. So the art's fantastic. And there's, I can't remember the author, but there's a book called Vesen floating around, which I think is like a Norwegian term for spirits. And that has some wonderful art. And a big sort of, yeah, it's a big sort of encyclopedia of different types of spirits. You know, there's all the ones that count as ghosts, all the ones that that count as sort of elves or gnomes or fairies. There's, yeah, the list goes on. There's some really intriguing ones, like which I think are from Scottish folklore, you know, like Kelpies. I think there's a statue of Kelpies up there, the two big horse heads.
Yes, there is, just outside Falkirk.
Yeah,
yes.
Those are like water spirits, really dark. They would like sort of lead children to water and then like encourage the children to climb on the back, and then the fingers would get tangled in the horse's mane, and they would drag them off into the water. You know what I mean? I think, you know, stuff like this. It's ancestral folk tales to keep your kids away from water when you're not watching them. You know, don't play in the other water. Stuff like this, you know, I mean, it's so rich. It's so rich, and I want to do my bit to help keep some of this alive with our own whimsical spin on it. You know, there's a lot of humor. We are taking things in our own direction here too. You know, MS Jones, who also writes for the Bizarre Archives, he's written a couple of stories which are just like really madcap sort of stories about little gnomes, like who are like obsessed with technology and you know, like collecting sort of old guns and stuff, and just getting up to all sorts of hijinks. And people have really enjoyed reading those stories. I've had a lot of good feedback about those. But yeah, the list goes on.
Give people.
At some point, I will put some sort of resources on the website for people to go and learn more.
Yes, and the website is linked below. Could you give people an idea of what this kind of thing entails? Can you give us just sketch in an improvised way the sort of average, the most typical kind of story that we're talking about. Let's say there's a forest, a snowy, a gnome, something happens. What are we talking about here?
Yeah, there's all sorts. I'd say the stories do vary quite a lot, although they do, you know, feature quite a lot of the same little spirits and beasties. But yeah, for example, so it's a quarterly magazine. We're bringing it out on, you know, the equinoxes and solstices. You know, the veil between worlds is thinner then, so the gnomes can squeeze out a magazine, obviously. So the second issue, which is the Christmas issue, does feature a lot of like wintry, Christmassy, Yule themed stories. The first issue, a bit more autumnal / summery. It kind of sits in between because I started in the summer and it came out in the autumn. But yeah, we've got stories about like I don't know if you remember Red Wall from being a kid.
Red War.
Red no. Wall.
Red Wall. No, no.
Yeah, these little stories about like woodland critters like having a sort of medieval siege warfare, defending like castles and stuff. It was amazing. Loved it as a kid. There's some stuff like that in there. There's MS Jones stories about crazy gnomes getting up to hijinks. I think in the first one, they have to go and rescue. The protagonist meets up with some gnomes who persuade him to help them rescue a herd of deer that they use to brew psychedelic wine with their urine after they've been eating mushrooms. Things like this. the second story, I think they essentially have to basically save Christmas by clearing some land and space for Santa's sleigh in the woods and things like this. There's a story about some a fairy character, like a recurring character throughout the magazine. He has to go and steal the fairy king's crown from down below in the fairy underworld and sort of run away with it to make all the fairies chase him so that the fairies come back into the world above. you know, very very whimsical kind of stuff. There's all sorts, and these are just this is just stuff that me and, you know, fellow Bizarre Kings have done from the Bizarre Archives. But I've had some wonderful submissions in from people who I don't know from the Bizarre Archives who've written me all sorts of stories. There's one about a lovely one in the latest issue about a house cat who makes friends with a garden gnome outside and sort of has to fight some raccoons and stuff, and he's sort of not very sure of himself. You know, he's a bit of a timid house cat. He has to sort of get that warrior spirit from his big cat ancestors, you know what I mean, and overcome these raccoons. It's amazing. I love that one. That's went down a storm. People do like that too. We've got some great art and that stuff as well.
Well, I guess we're now on the topic of the magazine. When did you first have the idea?
I was talking in around July with a friend of mine from the Bizarre Archives, Froskaz, who has also written a couple of stories in here. His latest one is about a fox. But yes, me and him were just chatting, saying we could do something like this potentially. We were just spitballing some ideas. We liked the idea of the, you know, like the take the gnome pill kind of meme that's going around, and you can see that in the little image there. Like we got art done for that, to take the gnome pill, just kind of get people believing in fairies and stuff again, save the woods, you know, like the woodlands truly are magical enchanted places. And we're wondering what we could do, you know, just passing ideas back and forth. And I think he came up with the name Toadstool, I believe. We were like just passing things back and forth. We wanted a gnome magazine or something, but like that is already taken, believe it or not. Not by something like this. I think it's something that's like now out of print, but I just can't really take it. So we settled on Toadstool magazine, and then I think by the end of two more days had passed, I'd basically like registered a website, was looking at printers, was learning layout software, was writing stories, was sort of pestering people that I knew from Bizarre Archives to write me some stories too. And then yeah, in a month or two, I basically had a fully fledged product, a magazine.
It's amazing how quickly something can take shape in the early stages.
It is. It is. I must thank everyone from the Bizarre Archives too, because like it's kind of, you know, just a mad idea I've had. And like we approached, I sort of just messaged people like MS Jones. You know what I mean? Like I'm, you know, bear with me. This is crazy, but I'm doing a magazine based on this, based on that. Could you write me a story? And he's like, yeah, give me 2 days. You know, I was like, okay, great. You know, it was, I came up with some pretty bizarre requests and people fulfilled them readily. and far surpassed what I thought there would be in terms of like of quality and length and suitability to the magazine and stuff. So big thanks to everyone there. It really helped get the magazines out.
Excellent. Here's a question that's just occurred to me now. I didn't give it to you beforehand, so forgive me for that. It might be a bit off left field. Are there connections with paganism, between folklore and paganism?
Well, yes, 100%. I believe this folklore would have sprung up when Europe was pagan. You know what I mean? A lot of it has been refit to suit Christian mythology, such as the tale of Christmas and stuff like this, with Christmas trees and celebrating it on or around winter solstice and things like this. But I mean, yeah, inextricably, I'd say. I'm not the biggest expert on paganism. I think Dave Martell is somebody who would probably talk your ear off for several hours on this subject. He would really know. Yes, is the answer. I'd say inextricably, these little spirits of the land and stuff. I think it definitely comes from a time like, obviously pre-industrial revolution, but when there was just more like wonder and mystery in the world. You know, you really didn't know what was in those woods. You didn't know what was over that hill unless you went, you know what I mean?
Or I think this idea of wonder and mystery, I think, is very important. I mean, mm-hmm. especially in our age, because everything is scientific, logical, rational, mm-hmm. rather dull, and fundamentally lacking that feeling of magic. I mean, if you look at a concrete housing estate today or some awful strip mall retail park, you can understand why people would yearn for even just mystery. I think that for me personally, mystery is extremely seductive and exciting.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
I think that.
Go for it.
I would agree. I personally yearn for all that stuff myself. I think probably everyone listening does as well. It's a very romantic sort of feeling to have, isn't it? You just yearn for the time before when you didn't know everything. Or like, I mean, we don't know everything, do we? But I mean, you can't just like sort of go and look at a satellite image of somewhere you've never been and be like, all right, yeah, that's the lay of the land. It's okay, mostly housing estates. There's nothing to wonder about there. Like this, the whole world, the whole fabric of reality and of life and of living would have been interwoven with magic to such an extent that like it would have been real to you. You know what I mean? You wouldn't go in those woods after dark. You know what I mean? You wouldn't play in the other water unless if you're 8 years old because the Kelpies might be out. You know what I mean? Like there's things like this, like it, stuff like that makes it real. And yes, we're doing our best to bring it back. We want to return to superstition, you know? That's all. RETVRN and all that, return to superstition. That's why we want, and I welcome this as well in terms of submissions and stuff, which we'll get onto later about how to submit and stuff. But, you know, it was a really nice surprise to get that submission about the Swedish porridge gnomes tradition. We want to get more stuff like this, write articles, let people know, hopefully get people involved in practicing some of these superstitious things themselves, which would be amazing. I believe the the specific case of leaving your porridge out for gnomes, there's like stories about, it's basically to thank like the house gnome for all the work he does through the year. And you're supposed to leave like a big knob of butter on top of the porridge. As thanks, you know, because obviously that would have been a rare commodity at the time. And there's a story out there, which probably won't be too hard to find, but I could link it afterwards, about the a gnome who discovers he's been left porridge like without any butter. He takes it as great disrespect and causes a whole heap of mischief after that. Obviously, spoilers, it turns out that the butter was just at the bottom of the porridge instead. But like, you know. stuff like this, I want to bring this back. It's still there, it's still lurking. You know, it never really went away, but like a lot of people are quite simply unaware. And you know, for all people's complaining about being stuck in the post digital modern world and constantly being glued to screens and stuff, I think maybe this isn't the one and only solution, but it'll help. You know,
do you prefer stories that are set in the past or in a maybe a non-time, or do you prefer stories that are set in the present day and link back to that? I mean, is there a relationship there? Is there anything to say about that?
I think obviously it might be easier to write stories set in the past, but I will take anything. We have, I would say, potentially the stories lean more towards the modern day. I think, sorry, I'm counting in my head, but like a lot of the stories do basically pertain to like people living in the modern world who sort of bump into a spirit of some sort or a gnome or something like this. And then there's obviously ones about the animals, but so Frostgars is one about the fox, for example. He's like running through a city like late at night, like a modern city, but obviously to the fox, he just thinks it's like another part of the woodland. So there's loads of like really interesting descriptions about how a fox would perceive a city, you know, like buildings or trees and stuff like this. You know, he's like hunting for rats just the same as he would in the woodland, but like he's doing it outside dingy nightclubs and stuff like this. You know what I mean? Because he knows there's plenty of rats there. You know, it's I would take anything. There's even one which I've wrote in the latest issue set in a kind of a far-flung post-apocalyptic future where magic has reawakened. You know, I mean, the old gods are coming back to life and things like this, and basically like some kind of like eco-warrior druids have to basically like tidy up the wreckage, tidy up the ruins, you know, of the planet in order to encourage like the fae to come back and things like this. And I dug up a ton of stuff for that. I used to have quite a lot of books about like Celtic sort of stuff, Celtic magic and things like this. There's this stuff called like the tree Oum, which was like an old language. It's like O-G-H-A-M, where all the trees have their own name in like old English / Celtic, Gaelic. And all like symbols attached to them and stuff. So I brought that into the story, and these people are like sort of invoking these magic charms and talismans in order to fight like you know, monsters that have amalgamated out of old trash, who have like cameras for eyes and you know, smartphones and just sludge and metal crap all attached to them as tentacles and things like this. So yeah, there's something for everyone, I'll put it that way.
It definitely sounds like it. I mean, yeah. I find this idea of something set in the distant future very interesting, because obviously that's, what's the word, multi-genre. There was a term once, 10 years ago or so, smart genre, where you mix different genres together. And obviously that's quite a mix there.
I'd say MS Jones is the master of that one. He's wrote some stuff which definitely hits that mark. But yeah, sorry, what were you going to say?
Oh, nothing. It sounds it's very interesting.
Yeah. It's, I wouldn't call it sci-fi, really. There's not much, there's no spaceships or laser guns in that one, you know, but definitely it's like a post-collapse kind of thing. But like,
no, the thing with laser guns
in that story was like magic coming back, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, gnomes with laser guns is rather a strange notion. I'm not sure if that would work.
You can read about gnomes with rifles in some of MS Jones's stories. Like they're pretty nutty. They don't have lasers, but I'm sure he's listening now and he's got plenty of ideas. So God knows what I'm going to get from him next.
Well, that sounds great. I guess another question that I wanted to ask you is the importance of folklore. It's obviously something that used to be, you know, people say it was the soap opera of its day, and that kind of, I hate it when people say that, but it clearly was something that sustained our ancestors and was very important to them, a sort of part of everyday life for them. Do you have anything to say about that?
Yes, I think it still would be in sort of rural communities. The more rural you go, the more time people will have for this stuff. You know, like in old, even in England and stuff, if you go like way out into the sticks, they might have more like, so they might have wassailing and things like this, you know, like really old traditions, which people don't, you know, the meaning of these things are still being debated today, you know, it's kind of like lost to time, but like it's still being kept alive regardless. And that's great. But yeah, you can watch these documentaries, and I've watched them. I thought they were fantastic. The YouTube, it'll take me a while to find them, but I will find them, and I'll post them up on my Telegram channel, maybe. But like, it's a sort of people going out to find people in Ireland who like maybe still believe in the fairies and stuff out there. And there's like all these sort of like the older generation, you know, like really like old people, pensioners and stuff who are like living near like sort of fairy rings and stuff, you know, like just stone circles that have always been there, and like woods where weird things are said to happen. And they're like, I mean, they're fairly convinced, you know what I mean? They're like, and most of them are like actually quite scared of them, to be honest. They're like, I hope I never have anything to do with them. Like they're real, they're out there, and I hope they stay away from me kind of stuff, you know?
So
there's people out there who still believe, absolutely.
So there's a sense that these beings, the gnomes, are malicious, malevolent?
In certain traditions, yes. So I think in a lot of fairy tales, they kind of want to lead you away, don't they? To go and live with them instead and sort of take you away from the human world. But yeah, there's nice ones too. There's the whole range. But yes, so, you know, our ancestors were incredibly superstitious, as you can probably imagine. Don't piss off the house gnome, you know, keep your house in order.
What about the geography of all this? Is this entirely, is this solely a Northern European thing?
And I'm not
saying that that'd be a bad thing. I'm just curious.
I haven't personally seen much to dispute that. But if anyone's listening and they're like, no, I know like a Portuguese gnome tradition that goes back 1,000 years or something, I would love to hear about it. This is exactly the kind of thing I want to know about to publish in the magazine. So do pop up and tell me. But no, in my mind, it's very sort of Scandinavian, definitely, coming into the UK. Germanic, obviously. I'd say that's probably the biggest region that has a long-standing tradition with fairy tales and things like this. Yeah, absolutely. Northern / Western European thing entirely is my understanding of it, but I would happily be corrected if anybody has any more info on that.
All right. So somebody makes the comment, I think he's talking about elemental beings. What would you say to that?
Yes, this would have been the sort of, you know, when I mentioned that, like, the first mention of gnomes and stuff is in, like, sort of early occult texts. They absolutely would have been talking about, like, earth elemental beings. And whether or not you want to carry that forward and still think these are beings of the elements, that is absolutely a hard thing to say no to, really, you know. That's not there's no definitive yes or no answer on that one, but yes.
Yeah. Tristan says there are tons of Slavic fairy stories. Domovoy in Poland and Czechoslovakia are basically house gnomes. Rusalka and Strigoi are, and all sorts of ghoulies.
Ghoulies. Yes, I recognise some of these things, obviously, from like The Witcher and stuff. But yes, absolutely. Yeah, The Witcher is Polish, so that makes sense. I would include Central European in that. Sorry, I said Western European, didn't I? Central Eastern, there's definitely a Slavic tradition too. My apologies.
All right. Yes. One other thing that you said earlier in passing is that all of this stuff is still being analysed now. Now, that brings me on to, is this material that bears analysis, or is it mostly whimsical and lighthearted? And you know, the trouble is that we analyse everything now, and especially that we analyse it with a view to deconstructing it. And of course, the academy is full of charlatans who will rip the soul out of anything. That seems to be the whole point of academia now, yes. To pluck the heart from my mystery, as it were. So what would you say to that? I mean, is folklore, European folklore, is it something that is treated respectfully by the academy, or is it something that's denigrated and used against us?
I honestly don't really get involved with what academia has to say about all this, because I suspect I won't like it very much. I can certainly see how it would be used against us, or people would sort of dismiss it out of hand as being just sort of like frivolous, if you know what I mean, like sort of outmoded stuff that, like, you know, those stupid people in the past who knew way less than we do, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, they believed in fairies, you know what I mean? Like, you know, these people live better lives than you, I guarantee it. And they believed in fairies. They live better and more fulfilling lives than the Excel spreadsheet pushing generations of today. But yeah,
Let me give you an
I might have lost,
example.
Track of the question there, to be honest.
I was asking about academia and the deconstructing and so on.
Deconstruction is a good point. I think people need to start putting stuff back together. You know what I mean? Things have been deconstructed to the back teeth. We're bored of
Yes.
deconstruction.
But
Nobody cares. You want to like publish an academic article about like about this and that, like kind of people are over it, you know what I mean? Start taking these cool little pieces and build something new, you know what I mean? Make new folklore. Like that obviously is reverential to the old stuff, but yeah, like write new stories and stuff, you know. Put things together. You know what the constituent parts are now. Put them together, make something new, make something interesting, make something fun that people want to get involved with.
Yeah. Let me give you an example of something that it just occurred to me now that I read this ages ago, and I could bring it into this. It's kind of relevant to all of this. I was reading a discussion between two people who are involved in the hauntology music scene. Was it Jim Jupp? And somebody else, I don't know who the other person was, but anyway, they're discussing Arthur Machen, and they're saying, and they say the following: so he almost rationalized fairy tales in a scientific way. And the other person says, "I think so. I mean, he took it further because in his stories they're also supernatural beings. But I think in the Victorian era there had been a rationalization of fairy mythology." And claims that these stories were actually about this ancient race. Similarly, there's an idea that a lot of these stories are actually about outsiders, foreigners, maybe travelers, people who are mistrusted. There are stories about fairies abducting people, stealing things, and moving away. And the interviewer says, so fairy folk tales could be an allegory for something more xenophobic. And the person, and I think Jim Jupp says, yeah. So this is a,
Intensifies. Yeah, I can
yeah, this is exactly the kind of thing where I mean, where culture today is largely in the hands of the left. And the only way it seems like a time and again, that their only way of appraising the past, including their cultural past, folklore, is to deconstruct it and hold it to account. Hold it to the standards of today. So, and the fashionable standards of today. So, well, if it's about outsiders, then that's basically racist. And you know, I didn't want to bring this in so crassly, but it's interesting because it shows that they're not even taking the thing on its own terms. They're not understanding, and they're demanding, they're expecting our ancestors to have been cosmopolitan, rootless. Not tied to a land, well, then everything falls apart then.
This is, yeah, like to me, the answer is quite simple to that question. Like, does this thing from hundreds of years ago stand up to this lens that we constructed, I don't know, post like 1950? No, you know what I mean? There you go. I've just saved all of academia a lot of work there. No is the answer, isn't so.
I find it depressing that the left and the hauntology, I don't know if you know if you're familiar with that. It's a genre of music and graphic design that sort of recycles the past, especially the 1970s, and it harks back further to M.R. James and ghost stories and stuff. It's a weird sort of I don't know how you would say recontextualizing of previous recontextualizings. So, but it is interesting and it is very nice and there's a lot of beauty in it. But as I say, it's yet another aspect of modern culture that's in the hands of people who can only deconstruct and can only destroy, even when they're talking about the past, as these people are. They can't be respectful. Even when they're talking about something that they value, they can only destroy it. And this is a weird thing with, you know, liberals, middle class liberals will destroy everything that they value, everything that they require, that they depend on. It's a very strange thing. So here we go with, you know, okay, so fairy stories are racist. I mean, this is just absurd. this is outrageous. It's, oh God. Anyway, I want this to be an upbeat stream. I don't want it to become yet another metapolitical rant, but I just thought it was interesting to bring that in.
It is. Well, I wasn't aware of this particular thing, obviously, but like, yeah, it does not surprise me at all. You know what I mean? It's an aspect of European culture that goes way back, that we're all very fond of, that is, based, basically. So they're not going to like it, are they? It does not surprise me at all that they'd come for it, you know? I'm waiting to see an article about how gnomes are racist and all these gnomes that we're seeing pop up in shops there. Need to, I don't know.
Well, we
be
see...
diversified or go away or something like this. You know, I mean, it's coming. Like within 19 years, I will see that article in some kind of like a Guardian or something. You know,
I think it is. I think I've already seen similar things because they'll say that Lord of the Rings is basically intrinsically racist because of the man who wrote it, the age that he lived in, his assumptions about life, but also because it harks back to Lord of the Rings. Yeah, but also because it harks back to European mythology and folklore, so that necessarily excludes non-Europeans. So therefore, it has to be diversified in order to purge it of its original sin of racism. You know, this is absurd, but there's always the danger of laughing at the thing that is actually dangerous. You know, it's laughing at the clown with the knife
It don't get me wrong. I am laughing. I do find it funny, but yes, they do kind of get a lot of wins, don't they? When they do come after things like that, but I think that's just a symptom of the people who really have the power to pull the strings or do anything being on their side, basically. So you know, they will get a lot of wins, basically, whatever they do. Yeah,
it's unfortunate, but of course that doesn't mean that we can't keep doing this stuff and keep it alive.
Yeah, so, yeah. I'm not black-pilled on all that. Maybe it sounded like I was, but I'm totally not. I'm the opposite.
No, you don't sound black-pilled at all.
I'm gnome-pilled.
Okay, well, I think that's all of the questions that I wanted to ask you. So why don't you just talk more generally about Toadstool Magazine, how people can find it, how they can get it, and how they can contribute to it?
So it's first of all, like, we don't use like Amazon or print on demand services or anything. So like, I'm kind of like approaching a printer and getting a quote, like really old school, and just getting it printed and buying a box of them and hoping that they sell, essentially. Very old school, like bootstrapped operation. It's like full color. Yeah, full color art all the way throughout. Big A4 magazine. Feels nice and high quality, nice and hefty in the hand. It's a real, really good piece of work. And there's, I'm really proud of it. I'm proud of everyone who contributed to. You can find it on toadstoolmag.com. Or, you know, you can find plenty of links to it on the Toadstool Magazine Telegram channel, which will probably just be, it's Toadstool Mag as well. Yeah, t.me/Toadstool Mag. You can submit to it by, I'll post something in the private, in our Telegram chat, which is just the submissions email address that you could maybe put in the chat or something for anybody that's listening. But that's madcap@toadstoolmag.com. And that's the email address where I'll monitor submissions. So if you do have any stories or poetry or articles or even things you want to make me aware of to write an article about in future, I'm willing to take that. If you are going to submit something, we're doing, as we said, sort of quarterly solstice and equinox themed releases. So the next one will be like a kind of springtime vibe. You know, the sun's coming back, new life springing up, things like this. I would greatly appreciate things of that nature, but by all means, it doesn't have to be, you know. You can submit me anything and I will be very enthused. I'm really impressed with some of the stuff I've got lately. So thank you to everyone who did that.
One other thing I wanted to ask you about, how technical a guy are you? How are you into the, you know, graphic design and all that?
Not really.
Okay.
I have good friends though. My girlfriend as well is very good with it. She's designed quite a lot of stuff, like the page border. Somebody called Jayla Dark on Telegram, who runs a Telegram channel called La Dark Arts.
Oh yes, I know her. Yes.
Yeah, she did the latest Toadstool logo, so the one for the second edition, which is a very good piece of graphic design. Like, that's lovely. So yeah, I have good friends who are good with it, and my girlfriend helps out too. I've you know, begrudgingly learned some layout software, which continuously drives me mad. But you know, I'm not like a total tech boomer. Like, I know my way around computers and stuff. But yeah, I'm not exactly like gifted in the realm of graphic design. So I am eternally thankful to have people close to me who are.
Mm.
And so the front cover's painted by like my friend's wife and stuff. They've just had a baby. She's a couple of months old. So congratulations to them. But so she's painted both of the covers of the two issues that are out. And I hope she continues to paint them in future if she has the time. So it's just a really like sort of, I'm not sure what the word I'm looking for is, but like it's mostly done by our guys, if you know what I mean. Like I'm pulling in resources from people from the Bizarre Archives, from like, I don't know, White Art Collective, and all sorts of different people that you've probably seen knocking around on Telegram, people I know in my personal life, and just putting something together, you know.
Absolutely. The other thing I wanted to ask you about was the illustrations, and I imagine that would you like people to help with that aspect of it?
100%. We need so much art. It's unbelievable. Like it's about 64 pages, and I like to put art in for every story. Like you know, so if you're a gifted artist, then get in touch. If you just want to draw a cool picture of a gnome or something, send me that too. People do that all the time, and I do publish it. You know, if it's of high enough quality, and it usually is, I publish it, and I'm very happy to receive it. So yeah, we need a ton of art. On the graphic design thing too, one thing that I'm continuously asking for, which I still don't have, is like just little like sort of page break elements and things like this, you know. You know, not so much like full page art, but just like, you know, cool little motifs or something that I can use to like,
yes.
But yeah, you know, like I don't want to rely on any sort of stock elements, if you know what I mean. I want like,
yes, you want it all to be original.
It's about 95% bespoke at the moment, which is nice, but yeah, that's something I'm missing. So if you're good at that, give me a shout. Obviously, yeah. That's something I'd like.
I realized I should have put up some sample images from it. So here are the two covers. This is the first issue, mm-hmm. Which just to give people a notion of how it looks and the feel of it, which is very nice. And then the second issue is this one, which is the more Christmassy one.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like that even the stool there looks like a toast stool.
Yes. They actually have that stool. My friend and his wife, they bought this stool and they were they thought it was quite funny. So I believe they've painted the stool that they own, the Toadstool stool. Very very meta there, so yeah. But like, if you want more sample pages and stuff, come and check out the Telegram channel. I do post stuff like that, you know, quite often. Little sample sort of first page of a story or something like this, or some art that's going to be in there, or like a mashup of different pages that you might find.
Okay, do you feel that this is something that you were that you'd like to keep going in the long term?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I don't really plan on stopping anytime soon. I'm definitely going to get the four out, if you know what I mean, like the like a whole year cycle. So then I've got like a, you know, I've got my like spring, summer, autumn, winter. I'll probably reassess at the end of it. See, like, you know, am I bankrupt? Do people still like this? You know, but like, I don't really plan on stopping. No, I don't really plan on stopping on writing for Bizarre Archives or anything either. You know, I like writing. It's a hobby of mine. It's a passion of mine. I do it quite a lot. It's nice to have an outlet, and people have said very nice things about my stories also. So yeah, I would absolutely not stop. Not at all.
Yeah. Fantastic. I was going to ask, do you feel that this is something you were destined to do? But then I realized in that sense, a bit pretentious. But
I'll go with yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, it does sound like you were preparing for this all your life, perhaps without realizing it.
Yeah, I was writing stories and stuff for years. I just kind of didn't show anybody. I think you've got to like hone your craft in the dark a little bit, you know?
Oh,
It's
yeah.
like learning to play guitar or something. Like, nobody's going to be impressed by your like shit attempt at Smoke on the Water. You know what I mean? You kind of want to like just practice a bit and get the basics down first before showing people. So yeah, I was doing this for quite a while, but I think yeah, only started submitting stories to different magazines and stuff probably a couple of years ago, including Dave Martell's Bizarchives. And I've basically ran with Bizarchives ever since. I've also got some stuff out in like Brendan Heard's Aegeon magazine.
Ah, yes, that's
Brendan Heard is a
I
contributor actually, like
yeah.
fairly regularly. He actually drew this gnome pill art, you know, the Take the Gnome Pill.
Right,
No.
yes.
Yeah.
Just to be clear, Brendan Heard is the man behind Aureus Press
Yes,
and
he is.
Trad Western Art, just so that people know who we're talking about. And he is a great guy. I
He's an
count him
absolute
as a
gent.
friend. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been on his stream. He's a good laugh.
Yes, he certainly is. All right, well, I guess that's all. I think that this is the kind of thing. Toadstool magazine is. I really think it's the kind of thing that we should be doing, and I think it's valuable. I think it's probably nourishing for people, and with all the crap that we have for popular culture now, and it's junk, it's ephemeral, it's silly, it's meaningless, it's nihilistic. I think something like this is really a diamond in the rough. So I genuinely applaud you for
Well,
creating
thank you.
this.
That's exactly the kind of thing I wanted to hear when doing it. I think that's our aim behind all of this stuff, including probably what Aureus Press and the Bizarchives and stuff is doing too. You know, get involved with stuff like this instead. It's great, you know. It just, yeah, like get involved, like read, write. Yeah, buy the books, buy the magazines, just, you know, build up a collection of like absolutely based stuff from your guys. It's going to be great. It's just going to keep going as well. We keep getting bigger and bigger. It's like a big snowball effect. There's more and more of us. New publications are going to keep coming out and stuff, which will cover every possible base. It's going to be lovely, you know what I mean? There's just whether or not we'll topple, you know, Marvel Comics or something. I don't know. It's a pretty grandiose vision, but like, just don't get involved. You know what I mean? When there's like Iron Man 6 comes out, just don't go. You know what I mean? I mean, you probably weren't going to go anyway, but buy Toadstool magazine instead. You know what I mean? Buy Bizarchives 7 or whatever when it's out. You know,
Yes.
just do that instead. There's way better stuff out there. It's happening. I think there's been a lot of like people saying, you know, we need to start making our own culture. We need to start making our own stuff. But like, we are now. It's good. Get
Yeah.
involved.
Yeah, absolutely. It's there. It's there now. And people should get on board. People should definitely support it. So yeah, I completely agree. There are a few hyper chats, super chats, so I'll get to those now.
All right.
Dave Martell, your friend, says Toadstool is a real creamy slab. Gnome Sane. Thank you for that,
You. He
Dave.
always super chats me some excellent stuff. Thank you very much, Dave.
All right. And he also says AC is a brilliant writer and has an unmatched work ethic. Absolute pillar in the blossoming literature movement and a bestseller.
Yes, Spire did get into the bestsellers. That's like a solo novella of mine that we released through Bizarchives. It did
Yeah,
actually climb into
we
like the
intended to get onto that. Do you want to tell people about Spire?
Yeah, I think Dave might have done a little bit of shilling on his own stream about Spire, but yes, that did climb to something like number 12 or something in the Amazon bestsellers for genres like cyberpunk and post-apocalyptic science fiction, stuff like that. So we were contending with some heavyweights there, you know, Neuromancer and you know, very popular stuff, Philip K. Dick and stuff. We were beaten out for a week or so there. It was really good. It's
Excellent.
a kind of like yeah, sort of. Quite like dark, paranoid, far-flung future, sort of like a guy on like a mining colony who's kind of like you know, starting to lose it a bit, starting to wig out. He's noticed some things about the society he's living in that doesn't quite like, you know. He keeps on picking the threads. He finds something strange at work, and then like you know, he starts believing he's being followed by the authorities and stuff. He's maybe been abusing some sort of, you know, like stimulant medications because he's, you know, he's lacking sleep and he needs to stay awake for his job and stuff. And like, he's, you know, is he overdoing it? Is he not? Like, is it just the drugs? Am I just paranoid, or am I really being followed? Or you know what I mean? Like all of this stuff. And it reaches some fairly cataclysmic conclusions. It's an absolute roaringly good time. So I recommend you go and check that out. Spire, if you type in Spire Bizarchives into Amazon, you'll get it. Or I believe it'll be for sale on thebizarchives.com if we still have stock. You can buy it there, and we'd rather you bought it there, obviously. That a lot of people have said some really kind stuff about that book. It's probably the one I'm proudest of so far, in terms of like solo novellas and things like this.
All right, excellent. Good luck. Okay, Illuminatus says, take the gnome pill, buy Toadstool.
Yes, please do.
All right. Strange Rumination says, death to goblin kind. Send them a package from Father Toad Gaginski Mass. I'm not sure what that's a reference to.
Me neither.
Okay. Vingul says, thank you. Vingul says, some older people where I live in Norway still believe in the local elf or white-like creatures, locally called the Barrow people, and even claim to have seen them. If nothing else, I believe they are sincere. P.S. John Bauer is good, but Theodore Kittleson showed us how trolls really look.
Oh, Theodore Kittleson, yes. You want to go and check out Theodore Kittleson too. That's a Kittleson, if you're looking after Googling it there. Also some amazing sort of Scandinavian fairy tale art there. You'll have seen it if you're aware of Burzum Vogvikernes, like kind of work. I think he's used it a lot in his album covers and stuff. So you'll probably know a few Kittleson paintings if you're into your metal and stuff. He's great. I think John Bauer seems a bit more like whimsical to me. There's something a bit more like ethereal and magical about those troll ones. I absolutely love them. I have one on my wall now that I'm actually looking at. I got it printed and framed. I really like it. But Kittleson is also amazing. Really, really do like Kittleson too. So yes.
Okay.
Good taste, my man.
And Dave says, Arthur Machen was a genius storyteller. The postmodern libtoad has been so sterilized by scientific hubris that they can't even fathom pure imagination. To them, everything must be representative of the mundane reality. If not, they shoehorn a reaching metaphor.
Yeah, well said. I read a Machen lately, actually. It was really good. It's in this little like folk horror anthology that I've got called Damnable Tales. It came out lately. It's basically full of like sort of turn of the 20th century folk horror tales. I can't remember what the Machen one was called, but it was absolutely excellent. It was about them finding like some like flint arrowheads and things like this, and just sort of following the threads until he found out what was really going on. And yes, it was quite spooky. It was good.
All right. And then finally, Yono Hu says, are you a fan of Jack Vance? If not, may I recommend The Eyes of the Overworld?
I'm not very familiar with Jack Vance, to be honest. The Eyes of the Overworld. I will type that into Google so that I don't forget. The Eyes of the Overworld by Jack Vance. I will go and check it out. Thank you for the recommendation.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for those hyper chats. So, this, as I said, I think this sounds like a great project, and I hope that it is successful and that you keep it going for a long time. And I hope that people buy the magazine. That's really what it comes down to at this point. So
yes, a couple of people have during the stream. I've saw the notifications come up. So thank you very much if you're still listening. Absolutely great.
Excellent.
Thank you very much for the support. Thank you to everyone else who's bought one so far. Thank you to everyone who's contributed. Thank you to everybody who's listening. I am eternally grateful. Thank you very much.
Okay, great. All right. Well, I'll be back soon with the next stream, which I believe is Niels Wegner. But in the meantime, AC from Toadstool Magazine, thank you for appearing on Millennial.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Okay. I'll see you all soon. Bye-bye for now.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The show must go on, but it needs your help. Bitcoin, Ethereum, Monero, and other cryptocurrencies are all very welcome. Get the info you need at millennial.com/crypto and make your donation today. Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile vlogger. Please help him continue. Until next time, enjoy the show and spread the word.